Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. In this podcast, Rabbi Schweiger discusses Parshat Beshalach. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as a Mashgiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Schweiger.
This week's Parsha is Parshat Beshalach. Last year, we examined the journeying of the Jewish people in the desert, the events leading up to the splitting of the Red Sea, and we spoke about the role of faith in developing the character of the people to move from slavery to freedom. I would like to examine this theme further in the stories following the splitting of the Red Sea. So let us begin looking at chapter 15, verse 22. And Moshe caused the people to journey from the Red Sea. They went out into the desert of Shur. They went for 3 days in the desert and did not find water. In verse 23, and they came to Marah, and they couldn't drink water from Marah, because the waters were bitter. Therefore they called the place Marah, which means bitter. And the people complained upon Moshe, saying, what will we drink? And in verse 25, he called out to God, and God showed him a tree, a piece of wood. He threw it into the water, and the water became sweetened. There he placed for him statute and law, and there he tested him. At face value, God is testing the Jewish people immediately after the events of the splitting of the Red Sea. In the beginning of the Parsha, when the Jews go wandering in the desert, they are being tested by God to see if they will follow God, even when it looks like they're going to a dead end, even when it seems that they are journeying to their destruction. And when the Jewish people walk through the Red Sea and show that they are prepared to follow God, to follow their destiny, the waters part, and the Jews witness unbelievable miracles culminating in the destruction of the Egyptian army, to the point where the Jewish people sing a song, and we're told they believe in Hashem and in Moshe his servant. Once again, God tests the Jewish people. They journey for 3 days without water. How will they respond? And on the pshat, simple level, it seems that the problem is expressed in verse 24, when the Jewish people complain upon Moshe. They set themselves up above Moshe. What have you done to us? Where is the water? What are we going to drink? The appropriate response would have been to cry out to God, to pray, to come to Moshe, to seek his guidance. Interestingly, when Moshe goes to pray to God, God instructs him how to deal with the situation. But God's instruction also seems to be somewhat strange. Take wood, throw it into the water, and thereby the water will be sweetened. This seems to be an inversion of what generally is the case. It is the water that gives life to the wood, that makes it grow, that enables the trees to produce fruit. And here we have the tree giving life to the water, sweetening it to make it potable, to make it drinkable. In order to understand this solution of the water, let us go back to the beginning of this section and examine a very interesting rabbinic comment. This is from the tractate, Baba Kama, page 82a. The comment is as follows. Those who interpret and read between the lines, try to get at the hidden meaning of the Torah, say that water is a metaphor for Torah, as we find in the book of Isaiah, chapter 55. Let all those who are thirsty go and seek water. When the Jewish people traveled for 3 days without Torah, they became weary. They were drained. the prophets among them rose up and instituted that they should read Torah on Shabbat, on Monday and Thursday, so that there would not be 3 days which go by without Torah. What are the rabbis saying with this comment? The Jewish people had this spiritual high at the splitting of the Red Sea. But what do they do, or what do they need to do, in order to maintain that experience? And the rabbis are saying, when one has a profound religious experience, it can very easily dissipate. In order to sustain it, you need to create a routine, a regimen of spirituality, which the Jewish people did not do. If I go to the verse 25, where it speaks about the wood and it speaks about the water, we just mentioned how water is a metaphor for Torah. But we know that eitz, wood or tree, is also a metaphor for Torah. As we say every time the Torah is taken out, eitz chayim hi lamachazikim ba. It is a tree of life to all those who grab onto it. What is the difference between these two images, these two metaphors for Torah? Water is something which flows. It is very powerful. It is exhilarating, but it could also be devastating. And that is one aspect of Torah. The Torah, which can be, as I mentioned earlier, a profound religious experience for people who live in a world which is very much preoccupied with the material, who is looking for something else, who are thirsty. It can quench that thirst for something more, for something that gives meaning in one's life, for something that shows there is something else which really excites me, which brings me to life. What is a tree? A tree is something which is stationary, which has roots, which grows slowly, which gives fruit from year to year, but needs to be constantly watered. Without the water, it will not continue to produce. It will dry up. The tree is a metaphor of a different dimension of Torah. Torah which is anchored, which needs to have roots, which requires a certain discipline, where the growth is slow, but where it is very much stable. The tree needs the water, but in our case, the water needs the tree. People need to have deep religious experiences, exceptional experiences, but people also need to ground it in day-to-day life. And the way to ground it is through study, not the study of esoteric realms, mysticism, which is very, very widespread nowadays, but the study of chok u'mishpat, of statute and law, study which is very much grounded in reality, which may seem at times to be boring, but nevertheless creates a framework that attempts to integrate experiences into one's day-to-day life. I've spoken on other occasions of the importance of a framework, of a structure. Structures are very important. Everyone needs to have a structure. Anyone who examines their life realizes that their life is structured. Whether it is structured around the meals they eat every day, around their job, people need structure. There's always the danger of being trapped in the structure. That's why it's important to have a change of pace. That's why we have Shabbat. That's why we have festivals. But you cannot live every day being Shabbat. You need to have the balance between the two. The Jews need to experience the Red Sea, but the Jews also need to be able to experience spirituality on a day-to-day basis. There's a rabbinic comment which says, if I go back to verse 22, that when Moshe caused the people to leave the Red Sea, he had to force them to leave the Red Sea. We would assume the reason for that is because they've had such an experience of God that they don't want to leave that. I sometimes say tongue-in-cheek, It's like people who study for a year at the Pardes Institute, who've had this unbelievable spiritual experience, who find it hard to leave the Beit Midrash, to go back into reality. But the rabbis give a different explanation. The rabbis say that the day after the events of the Red Sea, the Jews are occupied with collecting all the booty that is surfacing, because the Egyptians took out to battle all of their silver and gold and jewelry, which drowned with them in the Red Sea, but then begins to surface. It's an amazing comment. Here are the Jews who are on such a spiritual high, and the day after, they make this switch and become so preoccupied with their material life, as if the Red Sea never existed. If I take my analogy, it's like the people who leave the Beit Midrash and then go on, so to speak, with their lives, with their professions, but have no time to study Torah because they're too busy making money. What our section is showing is that spirituality is a discipline and one needs to actively pursue it. And the way to do that is through regular study. If one does not create a framework of regular study, their spirituality will fall apart. Regular study needs to be complemented by all types of special events. But the events can be sustained only by that ongoing experience. When we read further in our parsha, it seems to be that it is not only study, but other things that also sustain that faith. If we turn to chapter 16, verse 1. And the people journeyed from Elim, and the whole congregation of the Jewish people come to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month of their departure from the land of Israel. And all of the congregation of the Jewish people complain once again upon Moshe and upon Aaron in the desert. And they say to them, "We wish that we would have died through the hands of Hashem in the land of Egypt, when we were sitting on the flesh pots, eating bread to our satiety, because you have taken us out into this desert to kill this gathering of people with famine." And then God says to Moshe in verse 4, "I am about to bring down to them bread from the heaven, and they will go and gather it every day in order that I test them to see whether they will walk in my Torah or not." Once again, we have the Jewish people complaining. What are they complaining about this time? It is not explicit in the text, but implicitly, it seems to be, and Rashi says this on verse 2, that the provisions which they had taken out of Egypt come to an end. The Jews had brought with them food, bread, flour to make bread, and all of that has been used up. And once again, when the Jewish people find themselves in a difficult position, they complain. And when we read their complaint, we're amazed. The nostalgia which the Jews have for the land of Egypt, the flesh pots, the eating of the bread to their satiety, is that the image that they remember? Did that really happen? We read of the enslavement, the subjugation, the torture that the Jewish people experienced. And yet look at what happens. 30 days after the Exodus, the Jewish people are fantasizing what it was like in Egypt, sitting in the lap of luxury. I am sure that Egypt had flesh pots, and I am sure that there was bread to be found, but not for the Jews. Once again, the Jews have inverted a reality. What we see in these two stories is the difficulty of moving from slavery to freedom. You can take the people out of Egypt, but it's very hard to take Egypt out of the people. To be a free person means to take control of your destiny, to be proactive. To be proactive is not to sit and complain or kvetch, as they say. It is not to distort reality. It is not to look back at what was, but to look forward. To look forward at what could be. To seek guidance. To demand of yourself, what can I do to change reality, to create a different reality? And the response of God is to now give them manna from the heaven. But in the way of being a good teacher, a good parent, God does not give them this manna on a silver platter. There are strings attached. And this manna becomes a very important educational model. On the one hand, God does not make them work hard for their food. They don't have to plant. They don't have to plow. They don't have to harvest. But they do have to go every day to gather that manna. The Jewish people are told explicitly that every day they need to go out and get it. If we read on in chapter 16, verse 19, after the people have initially gathered the manna, Moshe says to them, do not leave it over to the next day. It is important for them to go every day and gather that manna, not to leave it over. It is important for them to experience that they don't have money in the bank, that every day they have to have that faith in God, that God will bring them manna once again, and every day they have to go out and get it. This is the discipline which I mentioned earlier, that every day you have to do something. You can't save up and assume that it's going to provide you for the coming days. But every day you have to renew your faith. You have to demand of yourself to go out and gather. And we're told in verse 20, there were people who did not listen to Moshe, who left over their manna to the following morning. And it became wormy and putrid. And Moshe becomes angry. But then there's a second test. All of a sudden, in verse 22, on Friday, the people gather. And lo and behold, they have a double portion. And they want to find out what's going on. At which point Moshe says, today is different. Tomorrow is Shabbat. As a result of that, you have a double portion today. Today, you will prepare for tomorrow. You will cook or bake, whatever you need to do. Because tomorrow, there will not be manna. Tomorrow, you are instructed to leave it over. Shabbat becomes the reverse of the rest of the week. After the Jewish people have gotten themselves into this regimen of going out every day and not leaving over, can they now do the opposite on Shabbat? Do they now have the faith that dafka on Shabbat, they can leave it over and it will not turn wormy? Are they able to have the faith that after not going out on Shabbat, they will go out once again on Sunday and collect once again? It is interesting that once again, in verse 27, there are people who go out on Shabbat to collect and don't find. This is the first place where the Jewish people are given laws of Shabbat, so that it isn't just the question of a regimen, but it is also a learning experience, as I mentioned in the very beginning. And for one moment, it seems that the Jewish people have gotten a lesson when it says in verse 30, and the people rested on that seventh day. There's a very interesting rabbinic comment which says that if the Jewish people would keep two Shabbatot, the Messiah would come. And this is based on the fact that we have in the verse only one time recorded where the whole Jewish population kept Shabbat. The manna is an attempt by God to now create a daily regimen of faith for the Jewish people. And that faith is reflected not in study of Torah, but in their day-to-day lives. They have to realize that every day, whatever they have, is given to them by God. God gives it to them, but they have to go out and get it. It is important for them to realize how they are dependent upon God for the essentials of their existence, to appreciate that, to thank God for that, and to also realize that they have to then do their share. And by resting on Shabbat, by getting a double portion on Friday, they do not become enslaved to their routine, but they realize that ultimately it is God who sets the rules, and they respond to those rules. It is a routine, but a routine that varies, radically changes, in order to impress upon them the fact that God is the one who sets the rules, who determines their reality. Later on in the book of Deuteronomy in chapter 8, when the Jewish people are on the threshold of entering the land of Israel, God reminds them of their experience in the desert, collecting the manna, and says that the whole purpose of the man was to make them realize, "Ki lo al halechem levado yichyeh adam," that not on bread alone does a man live. "Ki al kol motzav fi Hashem yichyeh adam," that man lives by the word, whatever issues from the mouth of God. When the Jewish people come into the land of Israel, when they now take control of their destiny, when they will actually work, plant and plow and harvest, there's the very real danger, as it goes on to say in the end of chapter 8 in Deuteronomy, that the Jews will come to a point where they will say, "Kochi va'otzem yadi, asa li et ha'chayel hazeh." It is my power, the strength of my hand, that accumulated for me all this wealth. And God says to the Jewish people, look back at the desert. Realize, whatever you have is from God. Even when it looks like you created it, ultimately it is the gift of God. Let me conclude by saying, there are moments in people's lives where they have profound experiences. One could even say, life-changing, transformative experiences, such as the experiences of the Jews in the Exodus, in the splitting of the Red Sea, in the revelation at Sinai. Those experiences can be very important in creating faith in an individual, in creating a revelation among people. But ultimately, faith is a discipline. Even if certain experiences can light the spark of faith, they need to be sustained. And the way to sustain them is by grounding them in one's reality. According to the rabbinic understanding, the way to do it is through study, through regular study. And that is why you find numerous statements in the Talmud of the importance of establishing times of study. There's no such thing as someone who says, "I have no time for study." You make time. If this is a value, if your spirituality is important to you, then you have to cultivate it. You have to create a framework which invites it in. It may be hard for people who have high stress jobs, but it is possible. But even more than the study, what seems to be from the text is that people should be able to somehow find that spirituality in their day-to-day lives, in the simple things of their day-to-day lives. When I have a piece of bread to eat, I make a blessing before that. I make a blessing afterwards. I acknowledge that everything which I have is from God. This is another type of discipline, not of study, of prayer. When people say, "Where is God? I don't see God." Maybe people have to look at the simple things which they have. The fact that they get up in the morning, are well, breathe, have a home to live in. So many things that we take for granted that we shouldn't. This is why God wanted the Jewish people to have the desert experience, so that years later, the Jewish people will look back and say, "In the desert, what did we have? Nothing, or at least nothing that was provided by the desert." So that whatever we had, clearly, was the gift of God. In the same way that God provided us life in the desert, God provides us with life in our day-to-day essentials. Miracles are not just at the Red Sea or at Sinai. Miracles are to be found in the little details of our day-to-day existence. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. And please mention the podcast to your friends. We're the number one Torah podcast via the iTunes rating, and I'm sure that your friends would enjoy hearing about the podcast series. Remember that you do not need an iPod to listen to the podcast. Any computer that has speakers will do. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.